From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, March 10th, 2026.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 26 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Federal agents today raided the Lewiston office of a behavioral health provider that has been implicated in a tax fraud investigation. Ari Snyder reports.
Between 15 and 20 agents entered the Bright Future Healthier You office with warrants around 9 a.m. Tuesday, according to a person who works in the building and asked to remain anonymous. The witness says many of the agents were wearing vests emblazoned with the letters HSI, the acronym for Homeland Security Investigations. A Department of Homeland Security spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Several people associated with the company are under investigation for allegedly defrauding the IRS through false tax returns for interpretation services. One of those defendants, Rakia Mohammed, pleaded guilty last week to filing a false tax return and interfering with the administration of federal tax laws. According to the Bangor Daily News, Bright Future was the largest Maine care biller for interpretation services over the last decade. In December, the state suspended Maine care payments to another provider, Gateway Community Services, in part over suspected interpreter fraud. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Meantime, Republicans and Democrats in Augusta continue to trade barbs over alleged waste and fraud in Maine's Medicaid program. But as Kevin Miller reports, it's unclear what, if anything, will come out of a federal inquiry into MaineCare.
Republican legislative leaders on Tuesday again accused Governor Janet Mills and Democratic lawmakers of failing to address what they claim is systemic fraud in MaineCare. House Minority Leader Representative Billy Bob Falkingham also accused Mills of a, quote, insulting and very inadequate response to the Trump administration's demands for information on MaineCare spending. Mills dismissed those criticisms. She also told reporters Tuesday afternoon that the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has yet to reply to the nearly 50 pages of data her administration submitted last Friday.
There's a lot of sort of semi-extortionary talk going on across the country by this administration. To what end? To get our election records, people's privacy records, private records? We don't know what their game is.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services did not immediately respond to a request for comment on Tuesday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Bangor City Councilors last night voted to comply early with a state law aimed at limiting cooperation between local law enforcement and federal immigration agents. The law would generally prohibit police in Maine from stopping, interrogating, or detaining someone based on immigration status alone. It will take effect at the state level 90 days after the current legislative session ends. The Bangor vote passed 6-3. The Maine House gave initial approval today to a bill that would require campaigns to disclose if a political ad contains images or audio that were altered with artificial intelligence. The bill seeks to address so-called deepfake political ads that are becoming increasingly common during elections. Representative Amy Kuhn, a Democrat from Falmouth, says free and fair elections depend on voters making informed decisions.
When people see campaign ads, many assume that they are watching authentic video or hearing real statements. Without a disclosure, a voter could easily believe a fabricated material is real and base their vote on misinformation.
But opponents say the proposal raises free speech concerns and will be difficult to implement, because audio and video are routinely edited in ads. The House voted 73-65 to advance the bill, with most Republicans opposing the measure. The Winthrop School Board is considering a policy that would ban transgender students from competing in girls' sports. Board member Tim West made the motion at a meeting last week, saying the school system should align its policy with an executive order issued by President Donald Trump last year. But Winthrop High School Athletic Director Joel Stonton says the change would violate state law and guidance from the Maine Principals Association.
It's very clear in the MPA handbook as an athletic director the route I'm supposed to follow, which is that I have to follow the state law.
The Maine Human Rights Commission is suing seven school districts for discrimination after they adopted policies that block transgender students from accessing school activities according to their gender identity. The Winthrop School Board will consider changing its policy May 6th. The Waterville School Board voted last night to rename the George J. Mitchell Elementary School to Brookside Elementary School. The vote is part of a fallout following the discovery of the former senator's name, which appeared hundreds of times in the collection of documents known as the Epstein Files. Brookside Elementary was renamed back in 1995 after Mitchell left the Senate. The board voted to restore the original name. Children's disability rights advocates say proposed changes to MaineCare rules would deny services to kids who need it. Nancy Cronin, executive director of the Maine Developmental Disabilities Council, says the proposals are short-sighted.
It really is going to limit those kids with developmental disabilities who can get help for only when something is wrong. And that is not the way to make sure that kids don't have problems and are adapted and learn the skills they need based on their diagnosis.
The state says the changes are required to comply with a federal settlement agreement governing access to community-based services. A spokesperson for Maine's Department of Health and Human Services acknowledges that some of the proposed changes will need to be revised. Public comment is being accepted through Friday. The Maine Turnpike Authority has announced that it will begin offering Easy Pass stickers this summer. The stickers will adhere directly to a windshield and be used instead of a battery-operated hard case transponder. Turnpike officials say customers who prefer using the transponders can still do so. The stickers are expected to launch before the summer travel season and will be available for purchase at the MTA Walk-In Center in Portland. And in an annual tradition, Governor Janet Mills tapped one of the maples outside of the Blaine House today to mark the start of the maple sugaring season. Mills hammered two taps into an old maple tree after inviting the public to participate in Maine Maple Sunday weekend, which is March 21st and 22nd.
And meet producers and taste some of the finest maple syrup anywhere in the world.
More than 100 sugar houses and syrup producers are participating this year. Maine is the third largest producer of maple syrup in the U.S., behind Vermont and New York. These days, it can take months to get an appointment with a doctor. And even when you do, the visits are often short. Frustrated by the lack of access to care, a growing number of physicians and patients in Maine are embracing a different model. Under direct primary care, doctors don't accept insurance. Instead, they charge a monthly membership fee. And as Patty White reports, some patients who have made the switch say the care is better and even affordable.
A few years ago, Maureen Duggan Emery's primary care doctor left a large medical group and opened a direct primary care practice. But Duggan Emery didn't follow her.
Because number one, I didn't understand it. And number two, it was too much for me to think about then.
But then her insurance, which she has through work, suddenly dropped coverage for a prescription she'd taken for years.
And I went through 3 months of going back and forth with the big medical practice, the insurance company, my work, who was, you know, coordinating everything, and ended up that I had to be off that medication for a while, which impacted my health and life in a negative manner.
Frustrated by the red tape, Duggan Emery decided to try direct primary care, which bypasses insurance altogether. She still has her insurance to cover some of her prescriptions as well as emergency care. But Duggan Emery now pays an additional $1,200 annual membership fee to her primary care provider. In turn, she gets unlimited appointments. She can call or text her doctor anytime. And she's able to get some of her prescriptions directly from her doctor at a steep discount.
It has saved me money, not cost me more money, but saved me money.
Duggan Emery is among a growing number of patients who are turning to direct primary care.
A lot of this just comes down to people wanting a doctor that knows them and is available for them when they need it.
Dr. Kelsey McDonald opened a direct primary care practice 2 years ago. She says it's one of at least 50 in the state, up from just a handful a decade ago. She made the switch after working for a large healthcare organization became unsustainable.
I was coming in early, I was staying late, I was working through lunch, and I was managing my inbox all the time, and I was still unable to provide patients the care that they deserved and the type of care that allowed me to sleep well at night. And so I felt like I needed to do something different, both for myself and for my patients.
Eliminating the administrative burdens of insurance, McDonald says, allows her to devote more time to her patients.
You know, we do house calls. We answer phone calls and call patients back.
That easy access is worth the $300 a month that Chelsea Rourke of South Portland pays for a family membership at McDonald's practice.
I'm more apt to reach out to my doctor because it's not like, okay, maybe I shouldn't do that because this won't be covered. You know, should I just deal with this at home?
Rourke says when her family relied on their employer-sponsored insurance and its high deductible, their health costs were unpredictable. And while they've kept that coverage for emergencies,
part of the direct primary care model became a way for me to feel like I could control costs.
In Presque Isle, Paige Sosnick says she and her husband were drowning in health care bills under their traditional insurance plan. They have three boys, all under the age of 10.
Kids are always breaking bones or becoming super ill at 4 o'clock on a Friday or a Saturday. And we live in a rural area, not a lot of options.
When their pediatrician opened a direct primary care practice last fall, Sosnick says they decided to sign up for $300 a month. She says it's already helped them avoid unexpected medical bills.
I mean, Maria has already saved us from 3 ER trips since November.
In order to afford their membership, Sosnick says she and her husband decided to drop their employer-sponsored insurance plan altogether. Now they pay into a national health share program in which members pool their money to cover unexpected health care costs. It was a leap of faith, she says, but
I can look at the numbers and see that we have made the correct decision. And my kids are still getting extraordinary care.
Their pediatrician, Dr. Maria Ruttman, says in her former practice, which was associated with a hospital, appointment times were short, and she noticed that some families were seeking health information from online parent groups instead of doctors. In her direct primary care practice, she says she has time to build trust.
When you have a good relationship with your provider, good access, and trust with your provider, all those three things naturally are conducive to better quality of care.
And for those who think that direct primary care is a luxury, Maureen Duggan Emery, who works for a nonprofit, says it's actually affordable.
If I can do it, making the money that I make and feel comfortable with that decision, then I think it's definitely an option for a lot more people than maybe think they would never be able to afford it.
According to the Direct Primary Care Coalition, there are more than 2,300 practices across the U.S. serving more than 300,000 patients. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, the latest on ICE in Maine. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.